So if I help you get one property this year, that's going to make you $35,000 in profits over the next 10 years.
Have you ever wondered the unseen challenges vacation rental managers face? Welcome to Top 10 Mistakes. I'm Brooke Fouts, and I'm on a mission to interview vacation rental managers across the country to uncover the biggest mistakes and golden lessons that have shaped their careers. Each episode delivers real, unfiltered stories of mistakes and triumphs, giving you the insights and strategies to avoid common pitfalls and to accelerate your success in the competitive world of vacation rentals. So buckle up and get ready to dive into today's story of challenge, triumph, and transformation.
All right, good morning, Brooke. How's it going?
Conrad, rise and shine. We're up early. We're up early today. We've got an incredible guest today. We got a legend in the industry. First round, Hall of Famer for sure. Unanimous, Mr. Simon Lehman. Super excited for this one.
Yeah, thank Simon, you, Brooke. Welcome. We appreciate having you here. Simon, I'm very curious. How did you and Brooke originally connect?
Yeah, good question. A long time ago, that's for sure. And I would probably bet that we have met at one of the VRMA International conferences, somewhere in the teens. So yeah, that's about what I can recall. Parties, conversations.
Yeah. First off, everyone knows Simon, of course. And I'm sure I had a couple beers in me. I walked up to him at a bar at something like that at a Verma event. And Simon, how long? I've been going to Verma since 2007. How long have you been attending?
Yeah, great question, Brooke. I've been in the vacation rental space since 2005. That was my first Focusrite I've attended in 2006. So I would probably say 7 was probably the first Verma that I attended as well. So maybe it was even then.
There you go. Good stuff.
Nice. I think your perspective, Simon, on the mistakes here is going to be really interesting because you come at this from a little bit of a different frame, right? Like you necessarily weren't in the property management seat for very long, but maybe you, for the listener that doesn't know your history, your background, maybe they've seen you on stage at an event, that sort of thing. They may not know. Would you mind maybe just a brief overview of kind of the history of you since maybe 2005 up until today, the bullet point version of it?
So we can absolutely. More than happy to, Conrad. Thank you for that. I've been in the vacation rental industry since 2005. I've ran one of the largest property management companies in the world for 10 years. We grew from 24 to 48,000 units. And then I joined the board of, when I left, joined the board of HomeAway. We sold that to Expedia in 2015. Then I went into the electric bike business for a couple of years, did a turnaround there. Then I became the CEO of Focusrite in the US a bit more than 12 months. It was a bit hard to commute between Zurich and New York, so I decided to connect all the dots of my past expertise while I was an angel investor in several vacation rental startups as well to build up the vacation rental consulting firm called AJL Consulting together with my wife. The company is named after our kids, Allison, Jack, and Eileen Lehman. We consult literally every stakeholder in the short-term rental industry. Our largest customer is probably LG Electronics with 225,000 employees. And my smallest customer has 40 units under management in the Swiss Alps. And anything in between, we are happy to support strategic consulting, M&A, and whatever is needed within the STR and short-term rental space.
Nice. I love that. And I think you mentioned too, before we hit record, that a lot of these mistakes are not necessarily always ones that like you've made or you've seen, but rather ones that like you've observed as you've had this opportunity to work with so many different types of businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good we're alluding on that. When I just reviewed those 10 mistakes, it's okay. If these would have been my 10 mistakes as a consulting firm, I would not really have a lot of credibility. So what I did when I got asked by Brooke, hey, can you bring me these mistakes for the book, which I'm obviously happily presenting on my bookshelf, not just for today, it's always standing there, it's a good background for me, is that I wanted to share sort of the 10 biggest mistakes that we see mostly with the PMCs, property management companies that we're consulting with. Yeah.
Great. That's going to be great context, though. I think it's going to play really well. I'm excited.
Awesome. Simon, if you're okay with it, we'll dive right in then, starting here with number one.
Absolutely.
So I'll read it off. Yeah, I'll read it off and we'll get right into it. And then I'm curious to hear your thoughts on a lot of these because I think there's great information on both sides here. Number one, being opportunistic and not having a clear vision, mission, and strategy underlined with a financial plan, not having a plan for bad times. So what are some examples, Simon, that you've seen of people in our space not making this mistake?
Yeah, for me, that's a very simple one. You get one unit to manage and you get opportunistic on the day you start managing that opportunity. And then you grow from there. And then with 20 units, you need to start thinking about, can I keep my day job or not? And how do I do this? And then you grow from 20 units to 50 units and you still don't really have a plan because it just grows. It's so easy. Throw these on channels and things just evolve. And then all of a sudden you think about, oh, maybe I need technology. And what about accounting? Oh, I've done this. So it's really, if you want to get into this game, I think we would support very strongly people think about why you're getting into this game. What is my plan? What is my objective? And not being opportunistic, because to go into the SDR vacation rental industry, and actually all our staff read Brooke's book, and this is no joke, because they wanted to have a good way of, not the one with the 10 mistake, the first one from zero to 500, to think about. And I think that reflects very well what I mean with that. And then having to pivot along the way all the time because things get harder and bigger and whatever. I think you just need a plan, a strategy, why you're in this space, what do you want to achieve, what's your objective, and start working towards those.
I've said this before, Simon, but whenever I build a business, I don't write a business plan. I build a pro forma. Like, to me, that is the business, right? It's like laying out the vision, laying out the business, but the underlying fundamentals are really comes down to the financials, because without financials, you don't have a freaking business. I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, oh, I want to start this business. And they give you this crazy idea. And when you start looking at the unit economics of it, it doesn't freaking make sense. So have that, the core fundamental, like you said, you nailed it. It has to be, have that financial plan attached to it.
Yeah.
I do another podcast, Simon, and we had this kind of conclusion the other day on an episode that everyone starts accidentally, right? Like there's no college for vacation rental business that people go, yeah, I'm going to start in this. Yeah, maybe that's something that can be fixed down the road.
Simon, yeah. We'll start one. Come on.
Good idea. But at some point, I feel like it transitions from, okay, I accidentally made my way into this, to at some point you're there. Like at some point you're taking it seriously and you're growing as the business. Do you think there's an inflection point? Do you think it's an amount of revenue? Do you think it's a number of properties? Do you think it's hiring people on the team going beyond you? Do you think there is like some marker that you could point at where like people do need to take this thing more seriously?
50 units.
Okay. Why that marker?
Because then things become more complex in many different ways, from a technology standpoint, from a staffing standpoint. You need to start thinking about unit density. I think up to 50 units, you can still handle it pretty freestyle in a way, and manual processes. Maybe the number is a little bit smaller than that, maybe 30, but above that, it's going to get very challenging. And by the way, FYI, AJL has built vacationrental.school, and all the courses are back actually on our websites. We have 160 micro courses of how to become a professional property manager.
Hey, there you go. There is a university out there.
Perfect. Yeah, we're also going to have links in the show notes as well, Simon, so people can definitely check that out. I'll pop a link to the website in the show notes so people can go there. Yeah, just curious, because I feel like there is that point where people do take this next step, and maybe it's more of a philosophical step as opposed to an actual, are you any different at 29 than 30? Not really, but it's like taking that step and making that next movement.
I think another one that is very classical, like when you build to 50, you might feel like a holiday. So you need to start thinking about it.
That makes sense. I like that. you want a time off from giving people time off, which is certainly the case. I'll dive into number two then. Number two, not giving enough attention to human capital, motivation, retention, loyalty. So yeah, the value of the team obviously is so important. Could you give some high level thoughts here on?
Yeah, I can give a very short one. The human capital is the most important capital in our industry, full stop. And nothing happens without the human capital, and that's not given enough attention in regards to operations. Cleaning will not be taken over by AI. Maintenance will not be taken over by AI and machine learning and robotics. So I think that's the key. So as we scale and professionalize the vacation rental industry and automate and introduce more technology for all the things that we can do to really add more value to the guests and the owners, the human capital remains the most important capital to the business. And when you read that book that Brooke has aggregated with the big 10 mistakes, I think there hasn't been literally one in 10 that has not mentioned the human capital. Yeah. So end of story, basically.
Yeah, this one, you're absolutely right, Simon. I think just about every person talked about it. And it is true. And it's taken me a long time to really realize this. But it's like the value of your company is really just the value of the team that you've assembled. And then obviously having that clear vision and we're all rowing in the same direction. But that's really what it comes down to. Think about every time if you have that one rock star on your team, the difference that they make versus just a B player, it's 10X. And it's amazing how that can move the needle and just make your life so much easier. So it's all about assembling that and building that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's like the weak link that you can't cover up, right? If you've got the wrong people in place and they're making mistakes on the housekeeping side of things, there's no amount of marketing that's going to save you. Like, it's always been my frame on things as I've looked at different companies, right? There's like little chains that like just have to be there or it's just not going to work. All right, we'll head over to number three then. Number three, missing strong leadership, giving guidance, feedback, support, walk the talk, and communicate the mission daily. So this kind of idea of leadership, Simon, what do you think people are lacking maybe sometimes when you look at companies in our space?
Yeah, I don't want to start a philosophical conversation here, but I've been a corporate CEO for 25 to 30 years of my career, and I'm seeing now we're dealing a lot with smaller businesses. Some call them mom and pops or family businesses. And I think that's, are you a manager or are you a leader? And what is the difference between the two of them? That's a very long conversation. Podcast will not give us enough time to debate on that. But at the end of the day, I think that's very important that a lot of businesses are not being well managed because the leadership is missing, right? And I think that's very important when you realize that a certain size of a business goes above your own head. You need to maybe have a leader. Or you take the leadership and somebody needs to manage it instead. And I think for me, there's a clear and very strong distinction between leadership and management. And leadership is so important. You need to walk the talk to motivate your staff, be authentic in terms of how you manage your business. And that's not an easy one because I think leadership comes with a DNA and you can't learn that. But I think for me, that's, you know, strong. If you look at the big successful companies out there, they're all led by strong, charismatic leaders who are strong visionaries and strategists and have good managers underneath. Maybe that's a long shot as a mistake, but you can think about it at least to start with. What's the difference and where, in which category are you in?
Nothing more to add on that. Simon nailed it. So let it be.
Nice. Awesome. I like that. No, that makes a lot of sense, Simon. We'll head over then to number five. Number five, missing a clear understanding of the competitive environment and knowing who they're up against and how to differentiate. So what are the ways that someone should evaluate the competition and not overly focus on them, but understand what they're doing so they understand where they sit in the market?
Yeah, you already said it, Conrad. I think it's a great balancing act. Sometimes we have consulting mandate where the company knows more about the competition than they know about themselves. And sometimes we have consulting mandates who don't even know who their competition is. And I think for me, this is absolutely important. And we deal with sometimes small property managers in certain regions. And they say, look, we have no competitors. And we always dwell on that in our strategy workshops. We go really deep on the competition, have an understanding, not because to copy things or whatever, but how to differentiate yourself. And we're going to talk about that hopefully in a minute as well. So I think you need to have a healthy relationship to competition, not a fearful one, not a hatred one, but competition is competition and brings you amazing amount of opportunities. And in our learnings and our observations and the experience that we have, there should be more focus in a healthy way towards competition so you can better differentiate yourself within a market.
Absolutely. If you do it like everybody else, you don't have any kind of differentiator. You don't have a business. So like here I was, remember when I started Vantage Resort Realty 2007, I came from the mortgage banking industry. The only experience I had with vacation rentals was I owned one and I've stayed in them before. That was it. So I would drive down to Ocean City from Baltimore. It's about a 3-hour drive every week. And I would just look at our competition. I'd secret shop them. I'd walk into their office. And the biggest competitor that we had, there was a company called Coldwell Banker. They had 4,000 properties under management, which to me, I thought that's what everybody did. I thought that was normal. So, but I wasn't scared by them. I set up shop right next door to them. When I say next door, they were 5200A. I was 5200 suite B. And my whole thesis was like, I'm not afraid of these guys. I'm going to go and I'm going to take some market share. But what I did is when I realized what they were doing, the first thing I did when I walked in to just get some information, the sign on their door literally said, per your lodging agreement, check in is 4:00. If it is not 4:00, do not enter, exclamation point. And then when you would rent with them, they would literally, there was no linens, there was no toilet paper, there was no nothing. So you literally had to bring not only your own linens, you had to bring your own toilet paper, you had to bring your own dishwashing pods, everything. And I remember I started to look at the pricing and I would look at, this is way back. So a 1-bedroom direct oceanfront place was going for about $1,600 a week. They just built a brand new direct oceanfront Hilton and a 1-bedroom suite at the Hilton was $3,200. a week. Okay. So twice the price. And I was like, so I just sat in the Hilton. I was like, what is the difference here? What are they doing? And I said, you know what? Do these people have to bring sheets and linens and toilet paper to the Hilton? Absolutely not. You know what I mean? And I looked, they had a USA Today sitting on their doorstep every morning. They had a gym in there. And I was like, what if I could bring some of these amenities that the Hilton has to the short-term vacation rental industry? And I know this is normal now. Like, and people probably think I'm freaking crazy. But back then in 2007 in Ocean City, this was the norm. And that was what I tried to replicate. I said, you know what? I'm going to replicate everything you find in that Hilton and bring it to the short-term rental. And everybody told me, when I told them we were doing this, they said, Brooke, it could never be done. That's not the way it's done here in Ocean City. And I said, you know what? If my wife is renting this place, she does not want to have to lug her linens. She does not want to have to lug all the supplies. So we did this and we differentiated. So we had, again, I paid a kid to deliver USA Today's. We did linens on all our rentals. We had Wi-Fi, again, mind blown back then, which nobody really had Wi-Fi back then. We had all the starter amenities you needed. And again, we differentiated. We did this for the guests, but what ended up happening is this became a great owner recruitment tool. Owners loved it because they said, you know what? Maybe we're going to get a higher clientele. We're going to get a higher guest. We're going to hire ADR. And it worked, but we differentiated. Had we not done that, and if we did it like every other management company in Ocean City, we wouldn't have grown fast, but you have to differentiate.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if you've heard this quote before, Simon. It's one of my favorites from Seth Godin. And he says, the problem with the race to the bottom is that you might win. And that's what a commodity service is, right? It's a race to the bottom. Because at some point, you're delivering the same things as everybody else. Then someone else will say, I'll do the same thing, but I'll do it for $140 a night instead of $150 a night. And the problem with winning that race is you don't want to win that race. So actually, this dovetails perfectly. Number six, here's my follow-up question. Not knowing what makes the business truly unique and not having a me-too strategy. So how does one, Brooke just gave a phenomenal example there of how he differentiated in Ocean City. What are some other examples that you've seen in your work, Simon, where businesses can differ?
I want to more allude to the conversation on that in terms of our consulting mandates. So obviously, there's a lot of great management books behind me and differentiation. Not having a Me Too is basically, or having a Me Too strategy is the sentence. And I love that piece in our consulting mandates when we debate that with management teams. What sets you apart and why do you argue of not having a Me Too strategy? And that's super hard in the short-term rental industry because you're renting to guests and you manage homes of owners, right? And people really struggle. It's interesting in these conversations that when they say, okay, what does that mean not having a Me Too strategy? And does it mean Me Too is, okay, I'm in vacation rental. I rent homes to guests. That's what we're doing. I say, well, but that 140,000 other property managers are doing the same. So how do you differentiate yourself from that? And so we lead that conversation, that process, and really go deep, very hard. And then it's very simple to say, we have better people. We have a fun culture. And this guy's stop. This is not going to make the difference. We are very particular and that's where we fuel these conversations. And I don't want to make examples because it's a very hard one, but it's an important piece to have this conversation with the team. And all of a sudden, certain things will come to surface and say, hey, we are super unique about this, right? And then it comes really, and then it boils down to the detail. Right? How can you, and now with the new technology that is coming our way, especially for guest experience, upselling opportunities, make content available, you can really have the opportunity to start differentiating yourself from the masses to be entirely different to what is offered today within the vacation rental industry. So we're carving that out in the conversation and fuel the conversation with the team to think differently, to say what makes us actually so strong. And the results that come out of that are sometimes really mind-boggling. And that's something to spend a lot of time on is very valuable because then you can focus on that because differentiation is what makes you to set apart. With the example that Brooke has mentioned, and he's mentioned many of them, and using a junior boy to deliver USA Today, that would set you apart. But doing remote check-ins is not going to set you apart, right?
Yeah. I heard Steve Schwab say this one time with Costigo. He said, he calls it the so what. We have the best pricing, dynamic pricing. So what? We've got the best team. So what? Keep drilling down. And I'd love to, Simon, I'd love to sit in on your process when you would do that with your clients and just see how you flush it out. I can imagine you probably get to that point where it's almost like a light bulb moment point where they get it and it's wow. And it just comes together. I'm sure that's really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. I like that. Let's go a bit of a different direction then, more to the dollars and cents of things here with number seven then, Simon. Not putting enough emphasis on financial hygiene, cash flow planning, trust accounting, no budgets, no forecast, and no tracking overall performance of the business. So people are just out there just guessing, Simon, and they need to get that.
This is the worst. Actually, when I looked at it, what I provided to you guys as an answer, I probably should have put that first, to be perfectly honest to you. But I didn't really put that much mind down in terms of priority because obviously I had more than 10 and I came up with 10. I always make a very simple example. In the days of cash, everybody in the world knew at 24/7 knew how many dollars were in their wallet, right? That's what it's all about. And how much can I spend? Like, how much money do I earn being a truck driver? And how much money can I spend until the next money comes in? And what are my costs in between? And is there a chance that I can put something away for tougher times? I cannot put it any simpler. I have customers that I work with that I asked them when we did introduction calls, and I, of course, won't mention any names, that I said, how is the business going? Are you profitable? And the answer was, I think so. And this is no joke. Okay? This is no joke. Okay, how do you manage cash flow? Trust accounting, we don't even want to go there. How do you pay your vacation? Oh, there's a bit of advance payments in the bank. Okay? Seriously, we could talk for hours on this now. So I think financial hygiene, like knowing what you have in your wallet, is key to run a professional business. How much can I invest? How is my cash flow looking like? How is my booking pacing? When are the bookings coming in? How are the ADRs moving? What are my cost drivers? In a very large European urban city, I had a consulting mandate where the guy told me the last time he negotiated his cleaning contract was 6 years ago. I was like, oh my God. Do you know your operating expenses? Could you reduce them? What is happening? So anything that has got to do with a P&L, profit and loss statement, you have to know it. You have to build tools so you have constant vision on what's happening, what it's performing, how is the cash burn, what are the cash requirements that you have, what is my reserve, profitability, margins. I ask people. And then we go into KPIs, right? If you want to raise money, the first question you'll be asked by an investor, and this is one for Vintori, what is my property acquisition cost? For God's sake. And then people have no clue. And I've been on so many private equity and venture capital situations, and the first question any investor asked, what's your property acquisition cost? And then they say, oh, it's about this. They have no idea. So this is what I mean with financial hygiene. So this is a massive topic. You need to know what you spend your money on. You need to understand your key KPIs. You don't need to overdo it. You don't need 20, 30 KPIs in your business. You need the key KPIs. And again, Brooke put that very nicely in his book as well, what you need to really track the performance of your business. And that all comes down to financial hygiene. If you know what is in your wallet 24/7, you should know what's in your business 24/7. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. I tell you what, Simon, hats off to you. I've seen the financial analysis you do on companies and the spreadsheets and the KPIs that you generate, and it's unbelievable. I've never seen, and we're not even talking about that. Yours goes into great detail. I've never seen anything at that level, but they don't even need that. They just need the basics.
No,
right?
Absolutely.
Simon's financial models are like breaking it down to even like the profitability per property, which again, nobody's doing that.
A client recommended this book to me a while ago. It's called Simple Numbers, Big Profits. It's by an author called Greg Crabtree. Maybe I can pop a link to that in the show notes. I think this one's
nice. Yeah, do that.
Yeah. This one's good. The other one that I love, by the way, sorry. I can almost reach the bookshelf from where I'm sitting. Not quite. I don't know if you read this one before, Simon. It's an older book. It's called Double Your Profits by Bob Pfeiffer. It's all about the expense management side of things. It's an older book. I think it was written in 98 or 99. So some of the technology pieces in there are very outdated. Like he talks about negotiating fax machines, for example, but the principles are the same and he gives you a bunch of prompts.
I just wanted to say the principles haven't changed over time that much.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I love those two books and those have helped me quite a bit. And I've sent these to different clients in the past because they said they can't afford marketing. And I'm like, then you're not running the business properly if you can't afford to do any marketing, but I digress. Different topic.
When I did my commercial apprenticeship, I used to telex. I've seen a lot.
You've seen a lot of things over the years. Awesome. Let's dive in then to number eight. I think, unfortunately, this one came up quite a bit with regards to like burnout. So your frame here was a little bit different. Thinking that the business won't run without the owner founder, and therefore not being able to take a break, a holiday, aka a vacation for our American listeners, one needs to delegate to keep the head clear. What's this that you've seen over the years, Simon, with this problem?
Yeah, that's actually a big one again. That probably would have moved up my priority list quite a bit to rethink about this. I just had a customer that we consulted with or still consulting with who have taken their first holiday for 5 years. And we actually saw them just literally on the way to the airport. And the partner, the husband, was flown back by air ambulance with a seizure. End of story. And this is just not worth it, right? So first time holiday in 5 years, running a business 24/7, and risking your life and your health and everything else for that, it's just not worth it. And you're replaceable. And sometimes people, and that again comes back to the financial hygiene. Like I looked at this couple's books. I was like, you have plenty of money to hire somebody as a general manager. What's the problem? Get somebody in that takes all this operational burden off your back so you can focus on growing the business, introducing better processes, deal with homeowners, grow and scale the business. It's just insane. People are so scared. They're building from scratch and they think they're the only one who can run it. Nobody knows in the business how else to do it. And even if the profitability allows it, and even if the profitability doesn't allow it, it's an investment. It's like an investing into a wheelbarrow in the garden. You don't have to carry everything by hand. You have a wheelbarrow. You can take 10 times more in one wheelbarrow. That reduces your time. This is something that I see so many times, too many times, that people are sacrificing their lives, their families, their health, and everything just by running 24/7 because they think they can't do otherwise. And I think that's something that requires people to think about where I'm at today, where do I want to go with this business, who can help me and how can they help me with. And trust me, once that decision is made, their lives will change overnight.
Yeah, you can't do it all on your own for sure. So I think we had Tony with Blue Maple on here and he said it best. He said, life's too short to constantly grind. And the funny thing is, I think the business is often better off when I do. When he steps out and steps away.
That's another good point. Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like the words burnout, Brooke, have been said on this podcast and the recordings we've done so far, almost every episode. And yeah, it's this business will consume you if you let it. There's so many little problems that can just pile up on you. So having that mindset of how do you take it in stride, I think makes a ton of sense. Let's head over to number nine then. Number nine, being too opportunistic with the portfolio growth and deviating away from the original positioning of who they want to be. So I feel like, Simon, this is like Hungry Hippo. I don't know if that's a game over in Switzerland, but it's this little game where you like hit the little hippo and it just keeps grabbing all the balls. I feel like that's what some property managers are like. Just, oh, a home, inventory, condo, house, hotel. They take everything, but it can cause a lot of pain in the business too, can it, unfortunately?
Yeah, Conrad, you already gave the answer, right? And that's exactly what we're seeing all the time. I think we're all, and I'm sure Brooke would agree with that, but in our business, the way cost of operation increases, margin compression is happening, I think it's no secret in our in the STR vacation rental industry, we're doomed to grow. So I think keeping businesses the way they are over time is going to be very challenging in terms of unit counts, etc. So we're doomed to grow. And I talk a lot about growth because I have owners who really want to grow into new destinations, et cetera, et cetera. So we help them build growth strategies, identifying new markets through data analysis, et cetera, et cetera. And then we have pushback by the team in the core markets to say, why do we need to expand? We don't need to grow. You know, we're happy with what we have. But as cost rises and margin compression happens and everything else, at the end, profitabilities will compress. So therefore, I would pretty strongly recommend that you need to have a growth strategy in terms of your inventory to create better gross margins and being able to have run a sustainable business. So that's one piece. And the interesting one on that one is we're consulting mid-sized property managers who say, I want to expand in destination X. I want to expand into a destination Y. My first question in this conversation is, how many available units do you have in your core market? And what's your relative market share to these unit count? And then the conversation is off the table. And that's it. So it's sexy. I want to be in multi-locations. I want to be there. But hey, you're already here. You have your infrastructure. You have your staff. You have your cleaners. You have your maintenance teams. You've done all the hard works already. So go after what your core market is all about before you want to start stretching out into new markets. And it's so hard, especially like we deal with a lot of like strong property managers who are very strong in their local markets, like in Colorado, in the mountain regions, who are very strong and have been there for 20 years. And then, of course, it's sexy to go in other mountain resorts. But then you have to start again from scratch. Either you can make a small acquisition or you have to start from scratch. And then when the market, the available market, the TAM is still 90% as well, go after that market.
Yeah. This people are doing this all the time now. This is the number one thing I get. And especially now, like these, I sound like the grumpy old man, get off my lawn, but like these new young whippersnappers, like they're out of the gates. They have one or two properties. They're already, they don't care. They're going everywhere. They don't mind. But I see this all the time. People are, they don't even dominate their own market and they're trying to chase different markets. And I fell into the same trap too. I had these grandiose plans to get, dominate the entire world, but yet we didn't even have the majority market share in our own primary market.
And in most cases, how this happens as well is that, especially let's talk about Colorado. So a lot of these homeowners have homes also in some destinations, right? So they go up to the property manager and say, hey, you've managed my home for 20 years. Can you do my Florida home as well? And then, yeah, of course. And then the problem starts. But I would highly recommend to say, yeah, absolutely. I'll get you the best PMC down there. He will look after it and help each other this way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My frame on this always, Simon, has been like, it'll be your second priority no matter what. So if you're dominating in one Colorado market and you go down to Florida, it'll be your second priority. But someone in that Florida market, it's their first priority. So it's also like, how do you do a good job when someone in that market is like, no, I'm going to dominate, insert beach town here, that sort of thing. So that's always been my frame on it. But you make a lot of good points there. Absolutely. The people will not listen to, unfortunately, in my experience and Brooke's experience as well, it sounds. Number 10, rounding us out here, not having or living up to operating procedures. So this is so critical to process. Maybe you could talk about what it's like to build these processes the right way in the business.
Yeah, I think and as things evolve, you do it as things are happening and not thinking about. And that's where we help a lot of companies who have grown beyond the processes of 20 units when they're on 100 and not thinking about what is needed and being more stringent about, hey, we need to document process and make sure they work with 50, 100 and 150 and 200 units as well. So the summary of that is most companies are reactive and not proactive in terms of thinking. That relates to my first point about the strategy and why you're in it and where do you want to go and what's your vision, mission about your business. And do you have the processes for it to support that? And I think we see companies that are horrendous, how they just pile on technologies and have 10 different manual processes because there's no connectivity, there's no layer. Just because it worked well for 10, for 50, it's killing you. And for 100, it's even worse. And I think that's something you really need to tackle very early, especially if you build a conviction to say, we want to grow this business to, let's say, 200 units, then you need to start right at the beginning to have these processes in place and use the right technology that will support you. Maybe at the beginning, this is a total overkill of what the business actually needs. But once you hit the 200, and I'm talking about software like Breezeway, revenue management systems and whatever, think about that and say, hey, this is what we need to get to 200 units. For now, it might be a bit pricey, but for then, we're going to be perfectly fine. And then make scaling and onboarding and everything else so much easier. But if you piecemeal this, it is brutal. And then after 3 years, you realize I need a different PMS. It's a nightmare, right? We see it all the time. And I probably have not met, maybe with one or two exceptions, I have not met a property manager as one of our customers who has never changed his PMS more than I have changed my car.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Awesome, Brooke. I know we're roughly at time here. We've got one more question I think you want to fire Simon's way before we depart
tonight. All right, Simon. So think way back when. If you go back to your 25-year-old self and give yourself a little advice, what would it be?
Yeah, this is such a hard one. And I was thinking about it. That's like, what, 30? Whoa, my God. This is.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
30 years ago, do what you think is best and what your heart tells you to do. So I would have not changed that much, actually.
Nice.
Love it.
I like that. Awesome, Simon. I know we're our time here, and you've been generous with your time hopping on here and recording with us. So we thank you, and we will put links in the show notes too, so people can check out, follow you online. Obviously, if they go to any of their favorite conferences in the U.S. or Europe, they might run into you there. Obviously, whether on stage or in the crowd talking with people. But yeah, anything else, Brooke? We should fire away at Simon before we let him go.
No, that's it, Simon. Super grateful for you always, and appreciate our friendship over the years. And thanks for coming on.
Same goes for me, Brooke. Thank you, Conrad, for moderation. Love our relationship, and you're doing great initiatives, and it's part to be part of it and create value together for the industry. And at the end of the day, what we're about at AGL, we want to help professionalize the short-term rent vacation rental industry.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, people can check out more about what you're doing there. Again, we'll put a link in the show notes, and we appreciate Simon for his time today. Thanks so much.
And that wraps up another episode of the Ventory Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's deep dive into the world of vacation rentals with our guest. Their top mistakes and the lessons learned along the way are invaluable for anyone looking to grow in this exciting industry. Thank you for tuning in and being part of our community. If you found value in today's episode, please consider subscribing to our podcast. Your support means a lot to us and helps us bring more of these insightful stories and tips directly to you. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave us a review on our podcast app of your choice. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but also helps others in the vacation rental business find us. Lastly, if you know a friend or a colleague who'd benefit from these lessons shared today, don't hesitate to share this episode with them. Sharing knowledge is one of the best ways we can grow together in this industry. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll uncover more secrets to success in the world of vacation rentals.